Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin with Jacob Kanzler, Craig Mauger, and Lauren Gibbons. I think we got a sick ward going on here today.
I'm trying to get out of this, but you guys were just so supportive of me being on the podcast.
When I called you Friday, it sounded like you had a frog who was answering the phone for you. It didn't sound like you, dude.
There's not much I can do. I mean, I was sick and I had to play through it.
Wow. He's going to sit here and silently nod or shake his head with the points that we talk about. We'll let you know what he's doing.
Live updates.
Well, we've got some interesting news that broke today. Gretchen Driscoll is going to be running in the 7th Congressional District against Tim Walberg in 2016. Craig, it's a pretty early announcement here. We're February of an off year. What's the advantage of announcing about 20 months before the election for her?
I see it as twofold. Number one, I think she's trying to keep anyone else from getting in the race. Come out early, say, hey, I'm the candidate in this race. Then if some other Democrat is thinking about this as well, it could force them to tip their hand one way or another, or it could just keep them out of the race. I think there's been some suggestion that maybe Pam Burns would run again, who ran last time. So, I mean, it could be aimed at just making herself the, you know, the Democratic candidate of choice early. And then it's also a fundraising thing. I think Rep. Driscoll, in her past state house race against Mark Willmette, she raised a ton of money. So if her strategy is, I need a ton of money to win this race, which she will, I bet starting early would probably be a good strategy.
You know, if you're going to run, and you know you're going to run, I guess, why wait? And I'm thinking about just in the state Senate race with Curtis Hertel a couple years ago. He got out way early. I mean, he made it known almost 2 years beforehand that he was going to run for that seat. And it was an inevitability thing. You know, Nobody ran against him really of any credence on the Democratic primary, just kind of rolled right into it. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, it's a huge district too, and she's not very well known in many parts of this district, so this gives her a long time maybe to get her name out there and figure out how she's going to get people, you know, people in Eaton County to know who she is.
And a lot of this too, Lauren, is getting the national interest on this, because Pam Burns ran a pretty good campaign against Tim Walberg, but in the end, if you don't have that money from D.C., and maybe just not the Democratic Congressional Committee, but if you don't have money from outside interest pouring money into commercials, you got a real long shot.
Yeah, Pam Burns was, for all intents and purposes, a good candidate, but she just didn't have the same name recognition as Tim Walberg. You know, it's just not something that she was ever able to overcome.
Well, and when the national groups are telling you, or the congressional campaign says, well, we're not going to put money on TV for you, I mean, that doesn't help the name ID either.
No.
And it wasn't a good, and that's, here's the other thing too, that 2014 wasn't a good Democratic year. 2016, presidential year,
yeah,
who's probably going to be heading the ballot for the Dems?
Right. This will be a lot different. It'll be a whole different ballgame for Democrats.
You got Hillary Clinton on the top of the ticket. The
potentially.
Potentially. But let's go ahead and presume that Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee for the Democrats, Craig. This is going to be a good chance for female candidates, you would think, up and down, as females would like to see the first president of the United States be a woman.
It would seem that this would be a good year for a Democratic candidate in that district. But keep in mind, Pam Burns lost by 12%. That's not a small margin in any way. That's double digits. That's a lot of ground to make up, regardless of what the atmosphere is nationally.
This is a Republican district, 53-54%. So it does have to be a good Democratic year in order to win this. I mean, Mark Schauer won this in 2008, but he fought hard to get there. That ended up being one of the most expensive races in the country as far as inside money from Washington and from the interest groups. So it's not a small task. So maybe getting out early is what you need to do in this case. All right, let's move on to the Safe Roads Yes ballot proposal. It looks like the yes vote is going to be concentrating on the safety angle as far as trying to get out the yes vote. The roads are not safe, Craig. Is this a winning strategy?
I think it's a strategy that deserves some thoughtfulness and some discussion, because I just find it interesting that this is the direction that they're going. Fix the roads, vote for this tax increase, or maybe, you might swerve to miss a pothole and you might hit a car. I mean, it just seems like a weird angle. I think it will be interesting to see if they can make voters take the step from realizing our roads stink to realizing if we don't fix these roads, I could be in physical danger.
They would have had to focus group this message, though. It obviously has to strike a chord with somebody, Lauren, or else they wouldn't be going this route.
Well, I just don't think this problem is anything new to anyone. It's not unique to Michigan. It's a problem that's been discussed on the national level
people. You mean like, crumbling infrastructure?
Crumbling infrastructure. Okay. Yes, like it's an issue that's been on the public conscious for a long time. Engineers have been saying that this is a problem forever, and so I just don't see how, you know, taking an old argument is going to, you know, move the dial like any,
yeah, but
any
if it's
a, significantly, you know.
But what if it's a winning argument, though, Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Craig in principle, although I'd love to see those messages go head-to-head in some kind of poll in terms of the public safety aspect against just kind of what we were talking about earlier in terms of the roads are really bad, the roads are an embarrassment, and see which of those like, resonate with people more. The thing I was trying to look up that I thought was interesting on the last, on the PPT ballot proposal, it wasn't like the dominant strategy, but I remember the group was called Michigan Citizens for Strong and Safe Communities. And it wasn't the dominant message, but there was some kind of aspect there of public safety and funding local public safety on a very complicated ballot proposal. So maybe the thought was to kind of go back to this public safety argument for something that's very complicated.
You know, Craig, if you don't do the safety angle, then what? I mean, you're not going to emphasize...
I happen to have some ideas.
All right, here. Please.
I was floating the ballot committee name, Fix the Damn Roads. At the end of the day, I mean, this is... I think if you talk to people, that's the sentiment that's out there. Just fix the damn roads. So name your ballot committee that. It plays on what people are, you know, interested in, where they want to go. It's folksy. Well, if you can say the word damn in a ballot committee name.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's ever been tried before. But does that also play up the sentiment of the voters saying, why aren't the legislators doing this? Why are we the ones? You know, interestingly, I talked with someone the other day who said, if the roads are so unsafe, then why didn't the legislators do it and why are they asking us to support it? Now, there's an answer to that because in order to raise the sales tax, you need voter approval. But again, that's part of the education message that needs to be delivered here, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm just interested to see if they're going to hit this public safety message. It's going to be interesting to see how they walk the line between playing up, you know, tragedies that have happened on the roads and not hitting on stories that are going to be like, really, you're using that to try to bolster your ballot committee? That will be interesting.
Well, my idea, besides actually using the word damn in a ballot committee name, is to, again, remind voters that as soon as you go into Ohio, the roads are instantly better. I think nothing riles up people more than knowing that Ohio is better than us at something.
Oh, that's interesting. So you just put a cam in the car, and I could tell you a road right now going right into Toledo. That's a frickin' war zone.
Oh, there's
several. Right before you get, and then you cross the Toledo line, and you could skate over. You could rollerblade.
That's another strategy. Our roads are an embarrassment. Look at the states that are around us. Do you want Ohio to have better roads than you? You're a Michigander. Come on now.
Yeah, maybe we could play up a Michigan State basketball game or something like that against Ohio State. Are you rooting for Ohio State here or Michigan versus Ohio State football? Are you rooting for Ohio State? Let me tell you something. They're better at something, okay? You want to see? That's an idea. I don't know. Maybe that's just kind of our competitive nature.
Well, they also do get toll money, so that is part of their road.
Yeah, that's now you're making excuses.
Details for the commercials.
Now you're making excuses for them now.
All you need is a car. That is just bumping along on I-75 and you get in Ohio, smooth sailing.
Yeah, I don't.
Everyone's happy.
And I don't want people to think that I'm just giving ideas to the pro Proposal 1 people because that's where I stand. I'll also give, you know, an idea to the no people. What about an attack line that's like, tell Lansing to do their job? That, you know, I mean,
that
I think that's
work.
The way they go. I think that's the way they'll probably go to be successful. You don't have to argue the merits of taxing to fix the roads, but it seems like the public sentiment would be on, yeah, Lansing should fix problems. They shouldn't be making us fix problems.
Now, as it turned out, I was talking to the Quadrant on Friday about roads and several other subjects. The conversation at the Michigan Press Association was an hour and 15 minutes long. I'm not going to include all of it. I put some of it in the newsletter on Friday. I thought the listeners would get some benefit out of hearing what they had to say about the roads, and we'll plug into that discussion right now.
Senator Ananicka, should the governor and legislature be subject to FOIA?
You know, I think that needs to be reviewed without question. I think there's some good arguments made in favor of that. I'd want to see what the bill looks like before we went forward. But it's hard. I think it's very difficult for us to mandate things on other people and then not hold ourselves to the same standard. Obviously, there could be some unintended consequences we have to look at before we go forward with that. But I think conceptually, it makes a lot of sense.
Senator Meekoff, I wanted your thoughts on this as well.
This is an interesting question, and I think it needs to be viewed in light of, we deal with a lot of our constituents, and sometimes it's about their tax records, it's about their children's records, it's about a lot of other things, their dealings with the department, and maybe their involvement in some sort of lawsuit. That at all costs should never be disclosed, ever. All of our public meetings, all those things are noticed. You all can attend them. You can view some of them on TV. I think it's pretty open the way it is. But our interaction with our constituents and a lot of things like that should never be subject to FOIA, because you wouldn't FOIA the individual personally. You would be FOIAing us, and you would be getting information that is not meant for you at all.
Is there a way to write legislation then that would protect these people's privacy?
I don't know that, Kyle. That's
okay.
A very speculative question.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I would fall where we are right now, and I think it's adequate.
Representative Grimal, what's your thoughts? Should we allow the public to FOIA legislature and the governor?
Well, I support broadening FOIA in almost every imaginable sense. There may be some legitimate concerns over personal information, but I think the legislation could be drafted in a way to have appropriate safeguards around that kind of information. I think it's important to note, though, that if we're going to do it for the legislature, FOIA's got to apply to everybody in the legislature and to the executive branch, because otherwise you will skew the balance of power between the different branches of government. So the short answer is yes, I do support expanding FOIA to the legislature, so long as it applies to all legislators and to the governor and the executive branch.
And then Speaker Cotter, your position on this?
Yeah, I'm open to it. I have to learn more. One of the things I would want to first study, and I haven't studied the issue yet, would be to look at, you know, why aren't we currently, what were the arguments at the time when FOIA came in as to why the legislature should be exempt from it? I want to first understand that. So I need to gather some information. But across the board, we've been in favor of additional transparency. I liked Leader Ananick's comment about sunshine. I think that we've made some steps over the last 4 years in that regard. Some on the financial side, looking at, in the House, we put budgets online, we put salaries online, we put, a lot of things in. And Bill, my first term, that put state spending online, department pages. So I would be in favor of it conceptually, but I need to get a better understanding as to why we're not there currently. I think, frankly, the only person that would benefit from reading my emails is someone that suffered from insomnia.
All right, one more question I wanted you all to answer on the sunshine question. Should the state require Michigan State police officers or local police officers to wear body cameras, Speaker Cotter?
Well, I think if we're going to require it, the next part of that would be who's going to pay for it. We'd have to look at that. I could certainly see some real benefits in having the cameras, but I think probably the more important part of the discussion is how are we going to pay for it.
Because that would be a Headley question, wouldn't it? Because we'd have to give locals money to pay for these cameras.
You got it.
Yeah. Leader Grimal, what's your thoughts on this, particularly after what we've seen in Ferguson, New York City, and so forth? Maybe not New York City, we had video of that, but Ferguson anyway.
Well, I think it's very important that law enforcement agencies equip officers with body cameras. It's important to protect the public and suspects from police brutality, but it's even more important to protect police officers from false accusations of police brutality.
Okay. Then Leader Meekhoff, I wanted to get your thoughts on this as well.
There's some real benefits there, but there's also some detractions. If an officer has a body cam on all the time and he's in some other place, and is something filmed that is not deemed to be filmed under the Fourth Amendment, some other privacy exceptions there. And I don't know the answer to that question. That would be one of my concerns. So I don't know if they could turn them on or off, but I definitely agree. Write this down. I agree with Leader Grimal. there are definite advantages for the police and anybody that's a suspect, because there's evidence of what actually was said and what actually happened. That, I think, is kind of important. And to Leader Cotter's mention as well, how do we afford them? So that's kind of some other big questions on top of it.
You know, Senator Ananick, I talked with Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard on this subject a couple months ago, and he was telling me that in a lot of situations, the kind of responses that patrol officers go to are not sexy at all. They're domestics. There are situations where there would be very strong privacy concerns if the public were to FOIA the video, and then you'd have to go through and edit out video. It'd be very time-consuming, very costly. How valid do you think are those concerns when considering whether this should be a requirement put on locals?
I think that's a legitimate point. You know, as Leader Meekhoff said, you know, making sure that domestic violence dispute, for example, you know, I don't think that needs to be aired out in the middle of the public unless there was something that potentially was in a lawsuit or something of that nature. I think it needs to be the concept needs to be. I think we need to have some debate about it, and I think it would be good in debate in both Senate and House appropriate committees. And I think the concept makes a lot of sense. We just need to make sure there's safeguards and that there's ability to pay for it. But I think it's the direction that we're moving. As the leader Mikov said, I mean, we need to evolve. You know, there's technology is available and it can be used in a very positive way. And this is a way to protect police officers at the same time protect the public if we can do it the right way.
Leader Grimal, obviously the Democrats are in the minority this year again. And so there are going to be things that policy initiatives that you all feel very strongly about, like expanding the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to the LGBT community, also requiring businesses to have a mandatory sick leave policy that probably are not going to pass this term. Do you think that supporters then of these types of initiatives should start thinking about the 2016 ballot to get these kind of things pushed through, or should we wait until the Democrats get majority in the legislature?
Well, I don't think there's a broad answer to that in all situations. I think it really depends on the specific policy area. I'll just say that, you know, it's long past time that we amend the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to protect all Michigan residents from discrimination regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity. I don't understand why this is still a debate in this state or in any civilized society. All citizens should be treated fairly and equally, period. Let's get it done.
And then, so do you think then that the supporters then of something like this are going to have to go to the ballot?
Well, all indications are that the majority in the House and the majority in the Senate are not going to pass it. In that case, going to the ballot may be the only alternative.
Speaker Cotter, do you have an opinion on this in the sense that it doesn't appear like you have a lot of support in your caucus to move something like this forward?
No, I've been very clear. We're not interested in going there again this term. There was an effort last term, and it's very interesting. The bill that was taken up in the committee regarding Elliot Larson would have expanded it to sexual orientation. It was actually those in favor of expanding Elliot Larson that ultimately shot down the bill because it didn't go far enough. They wanted to also include gender identity. That's where the conversation stopped. And so my view is we had the discussion last term, and there's not a interest in returning this term.
Senator Mikoff, is there a concern that Michigan would be viewed unfavorably from folks out of state within the LGBT community if this doesn't pass, that this could maybe impact business recruitment as far as bringing people in state?
I don't think the premise of that question is correct. I mean, who wouldn't want to live in Michigan? We've got four seasons. We've got 20% of the world's fresh water. We've got great universities producing folks that we can't even employ yet because they're so good. Who wouldn't want to live here? I don't know that that's any sort of hindrance at all.
All right. Your caucus, though, it doesn't have support for this, right?
Well, the ballot's a good place for that, probably.
Okay. And then, so hearing that then, Leader Ann, Nick, are you going to encourage folks in the LGBT community to start passing around petitions?
Well, you know, I think, let me answer your first question that you asked.
Sure.
Leader Mikoff, I think without question, it limits our ability to move into the 21st century. I think the generation below myself and probably the one before that, I'm 39, so I don't know exactly if there's two generations behind me or not, but I think those folks have just moved on. This is the question. They just believe that all citizens should be treated equally under the law. And they want to live in a place that is open to ideas like that, and they want to live in a place that has high-quality education, which is an area that we're slipping in, without question. I think we need to create a 21st century economy that, you know, we need to create a state that embraces the 21st century economy, and I think leaving these folks behind sends a really bad signal. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we can continue to work and try to convince folks, you know, I'm positive on this action. I'm going to try to convince my colleague to the left of me, and I'm sure Tim will do the same thing, Speaker Cotter. And
you know, I'm never to the left.
I can hope, right? And, you know, that's a decision they're going to have to make. But I think if it went on the ballot, I think it would pass overwhelmingly, as I believe paid sick days would. Because I think it's something that the citizens want and something we should move towards.
And so if it would overwhelmingly be supported then, as you said, then shouldn't we encourage this? Because that would seem to help Democrats up and down the ballot, if these kind of things were on the ballot.
You know, we get elected to make decisions, and sometimes they're tough. And you can't, I'm hopeful that we would take decisions I think we're elected to make decisions like this and make sure that all Michigan residents are treated equally under the law. And I hope to see that we do that. But if they don't, then I think that's a decision they may make, and it may happen.
All right. Well, I promised Speaker Connor that we were going to have one knuckleball question, so here it is, and you get it, Speaker Connor, to start.
Oh, we have the knuckleball already.
No, no, those are fast and curveballs. So this is kind of a knuckle change here. Do you have a preference for president for 2016?
Oh, goodness. That just hasn't even been on my radar. I figure I'll let them get another 6-8 months down the line before I start paying attention to presidential politics. So I at this point, I really don't. I'm not trying to hide it. I just haven't been paying that close of attention yet.
All right. Leader Grimal?
Yes, Hillary Clinton.
Okay. All right. Leader Mikoff?
Republican.
What, now, you were at the Bush event this past Wednesday. What did you think of what he had to say?
Very thoughtful things that he laid out. He was very cautious in saying, you know, didn't say he was running, but I mean, given the points and the detail that he laid out, it would be pretty difficult for him to walk backwards from that. So it seems like he's positioning himself well. He didn't just pick 5 things out of the air and put his name up there and think, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, he's been pretty thoughtful about it, so I think he's likely to be running one of our candidates.
At some point, do you see yourself endorsing someone?
I will reserve that until I see who all is in, because it's very important for the state of Michigan that if we're going to make some decisions for Republicans that go in a certain direction, we find the right candidate. And I don't know that everybody has declared their intentions yet.
That's a heck of a field you all got right now on the Republican side. What do you make of that? How many we got? 12, 20?
I don't know. Let's count. But there'll be some, I think somebody said it earlier, in the plan there's something for everybody not to like. It's probably in there for our field. There's somebody that somebody doesn't like.
All right. Fair enough. Leader Anik, who do you like for president right now?
Right now, I'd probably have to say Harvey Santana.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was always the kid. I wanted to take something. Keep the story going. No, I'm just kidding. I tend to agree with my leader, Mikoff. I'm looking for a Democrat, and I'm looking for folks from the state to present their agenda. And there's definitely a number of Republicans that I don't like. But, no, I want to see a robust debate, and I want to see as many Democrats come to the state, firing up Democrats for the 2016 election, and I'll make my endorsement at the time when it's appropriate.
Leader Mikoff, one of the suggestions that I've heard from conservatives is that one way to pay for roads is eliminating the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Is that anything that's even on the table, eliminating the MEDC?
First, you need to measure what the Michigan Economic Development Corporation does. Not everybody agrees with the investments they make to try to spur the economy or spur different types of industries here in Michigan. There's something to be said, as I ran my business, sometimes you have to spend money to make money. And as an example there, not all the choices have been great. So should there be some healthy review and debate about how and what we do? Sure. But eliminating it, I don't know that that's probably the right idea. But we have to do smart things if we're investing in Michigan. And that can be all sorts of different things. That can be supporting all the way from infrastructure and IT and all kinds of things for our businesses to grow and flourish here, and supporting small business. It could be about agriculture. It could be about a lot of things that we do well here. And then with just a little bit of help, they do much, much better. And in turn, the state does much, much better. So I don't think eliminating is the right thing, but healthy review is good.
Now, the former Senate leader, Randy Richerville, was very passionate about the film credits, as you know. Is that something you feel an obligation to continue carrying the torch for?
Again, the premise of your question is, does investing in this type of activity make sense for Michigan? And I think we've heard kind of both analogies. There's a group that analyzes the film credits and says, wow, it does a great thing for Michigan. There's another group that says it's totally wrong. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. We probably have a great amount of our skilled trade folks who have been helped along because they now have been able to gain some employment in that. So, again, a healthy review is good. I think that it's done some great things for Michigan, but certainly has its detractors.
So the cuts to the film credits are not sacrosanct, is what I'm hearing.
I think we have to look at all of our things, and if we're going to invest money, what's the return on investment? So that has to include all the things we invest money.
All right, very good. Speaker Cotter, I know that doing a review of the MEDC was part of your agenda and maybe paring down or looking at ways that they can be, I don't know, maybe more efficient or just gauge what they're doing. What do you see there on the MEDC? Are cuts on the way for this agency?
You know, I think what we need to do first, it was mentioned again earlier about, you know, sunshine and transparency, and I think that's the biggest challenge we have right now with the MEDC. I think it's human nature. Anytime we don't have access to information, our minds are going to run and we're going to come up with thoughts. And I'm trying to take a position of saying, okay, let's take the emotion out of it. Let's get the facts, which frankly we don't have access to a lot of those facts right now. And so that's what we're going to be pressing for is information. We'll then analyze that information and then make some decisions. But I think certainly there's a bright light. It's not showing facts yet, but there's a lot of attention, I should say, that's being that's on the MEDC right now. And I think that's going to continue until we get information.
With the budget right now at a deficit of about $500 million, film credits are going to get cut, aren't they, Speaker Cotter?
You know, I can't say with certainty. There's a lot of interest in looking at that, my personal view, and I've told those in the industry I'm willing to look at information that makes the case as to why this has been a good investment. Based on the information I have right now, my position is that it's not. But again, not trying to be emotional about it. Let's let the facts take us where they will. But right now, I think that it has not produced the results that we should see after this period of years of investment.
And then, Senator Meekhoff, I wanted to ask you, if you believe that there's money to be saved in moving all state teachers to a mandatory 401k retirement plan?
Do I believe that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you? Okay. Now, that was something that was looked at in the prior session, and the Senate and the legislature didn't move on that. I noticed it was in Speaker Cotter's plans for this coming session. Is that something you're willing to look at?
Absolutely.
Let me take it a step further then. Something that you can see passing?
I believe so. We're going to have to find a way to do it. I think there's an opportunity there for teachers to be in charge of their own retirement, make their own decisions. And I believe they'll actually have a better outcome than a pension system. They actually have teachers who do that kind of financial work on the side, and they try to convince their colleagues, and they just aren't able to do it very well. And I think we're going to give them that opportunity. And in my belief, the state should be out of the pension business. It should be all retirement based on defined contribution, not defined benefit.
Senator Ananick, obviously you're a former teacher. Are there bells and whistles going off in your head right now?
Well, I don't agree, but I mean, I think that we need to be creating an environment where we get the best and brightest, and this downward pressure on wages, this downward pressure on quality, this sort of it's a very negative approach towards education, I think, that comes out of the legislature too much. And I'd like to see us really value the type of work that they do and make sure that we get the best people and make people feel like they want to be teachers, as opposed to now folks moving away from that profession because they feel so demonized. And I think that it's the wrong step, but you know.
But isn't there taxpayer savings to be had here?
Well, I mean, there's taxpayer savings if you didn't pay teachers at all. I mean, it's a quality. It's the question of quality versus potential savings. I think that pensions have been demonized over the years, and there's the problem with pensions is people don't fund them. If we put the money towards pensions that we should over the years, we wouldn't be in this mess right now. I believe that we should be trying to get the best and brightest, and compensation is the way to do that.
Leader Grimel, you have any thoughts on this at all? 401ks for teachers, mandatory?
Well, teaching is one of the most important professions in our state. Teachers are those who are charged, along with parents, to prepare our young people for a bright and prosperous future. We've got to make sure that the overall compensation package for teachers is attractive to prospective teachers, so that we attract the best and the brightest to the profession. It's hard to talk about a defined benefit or defined contribution change in the abstract, because what would the match be for the defined contribution plan? There would the overall salaries of teachers go up to compensate for the loss of the defined benefit plan? There are a lot of other variables that aren't part of this hypothetical. I will just say that, as Senator Ananick said, the challenge with defined benefit plans is making sure that the will is there to fund them adequately. And to this governor's credit, he has done more to make sure that MIPSERS, the defined benefit plan for school employees, is funded.
But haven't we moved away from pensions just as a society in the private sector? Everybody's moving away from pensions, aren't they?
Well, there are a lot of trends in society that have occurred that aren't good. Real wages have been stagnant for 40 years in America, for example. We've moved away from the next generation being better off than their parents' generation. That's not a positive thing. The question is, how do we improve the teaching profession and make sure that we're improving the quality of education? And the idea that somehow we're just going to jettison defined benefit plans and lessen the benefits for teachers and somehow be able to attract the best and the brightest, I think is a real misnomer.
Speaker Cotter, are we going to be chasing away the best and brightest if we get rid of pensions for teachers?
I don't think so. I think there are a couple ways to look at this, and I look at it and say, well, first off, I would say, this is so 20 years ago. What was it, 96, 97, I think state employees went from defined benefit to defined contribution, and then I don't think we're taking anything away in doing that. I mean, I think we are empowering individuals. I look at that and say, I want the opportunity to make my own investment decisions. If that's my money, that's something I earn, and empower me to invest it. And I think that's exactly what we're doing in looking at 401k style plans here, is allowing, empowering employees to make their investment decisions. So I think this is a benefit for them.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the crew here and the Michigan Press Association for giving me the opportunity to talk to the Quadrant on Friday. And very good. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.